We're going to speak about this week's parasha, but really we're going to speak about Golas. And really this parasha is the beginning of Golas of Klal Yisrael, the exiles of Klal Yisrael. As you know, I'm sure you all know, as you know, everything's written in Chumash is not written for one period of time. That means when we're speaking about Golas Mitzrayim, right, we're speaking really about all the Goliath. That means all Jewish exiles have this form. Right? So I mean, even now we're learning Chumash. We're not learning Chumash about what happened in Mitzrayim. We're learning Chumash about what's happening to us nowadays. That means, for us to understand our exile, that's what's written in Chumash. That means, it's a different outlook. What happened thousands of years ago in Mitzrayim is what's happening to us today. So that's what Chumash is coming to teach us. Why is it coming to teach us? I mean, it's not a history book. It's coming to teach us how to deal with Golas and the reasons for Golas. So when we understand the reasons for Golas and what happened to us in Golas, and what we, how we caused or made our Golas much more, our exile much more difficult, that's what this is teaching us. So okay, it starts the parasha. Before we even start the parasha, it says, Rashi says, Vayichi Yaakov, and Yaakov lived, right? Rashi straight away on the first beginning says, Lama parasha zu stuma. Why is this parasha stuma? It doesn't have a break between this one and the previous parasha. Stuma means when something is satum. Let's try and understand what something is satum. Something satum means it's there, but it's covered, it's hidden. Right? So as Rashi says, there's an answer. The fish kiven shenifta Yaakov Avinu, right? Because Yaakov Avinu died, was nifta, right? Nistmu einehem, were closed, right? Were hidden, were closed, were covered. Einehem, their eyes, the libam, and their hearts, shel Yisrael, the Jewish people, mitzaras, from the tzar, the pain of the shibud, the enslavery, shitchilu, that the Egyptians started of the Shabdam to enslave them. Okay? That's the first Rashi. Now, obviously, this is a very problematic Rashi. Why? I mean, so Rashi, it's Chazal. It's very problematic. Why? Because we know this Parsha didn't start the Shibud, the Furish and Chumash. Ve'yamot Yosef, v'kol Echav, Yosef died and all his brothers, v'kol Hadoahu, right? And all that generation, v'chulim. And then we say, I'm skipping a verse, v'yakom melech hadash, and came a new king, or knew that didn't know Yosef, or knew that forgot Yosef, right? Al Mitzrayim, asher lo yadat Yosef, didn't know Yosef. V'yomer amo, hine am bnei Yisrael, rav batzu imenu, hava nichtam nit. Chachmalo, pen yerbe. Maybe let's be cunning with them. Perhaps they'll get multitude. Vayaki tikrenu milchama. There'll happen a war. V'nosav gam hu alsoneinu. They'll go on with our people who come on us. V'nilcham banu, they'll fight us. V'ala min ha'aretz. Like they were frightened of the Jewish people. Then it says, and then they put on the sarim misim, the man on the top, v'sivlotam, v'chulei, v'chulei, v'chulei. Started the shibud. Hello. When did the Shibud start? When Yosef died. What does Rashi say the Shibud started here? When Yaakov died. There's a stira. Rashi, his midrash, is arguing on Chumash. How do we reconcile that? So there's a Chasam Sofer here, but it's, even without the Chasam Sofer, this is a very, if you learn the Loshon of Rashi, you see the Loshon of Rashi. What was the Shibud here? Einehem v'libam. Their eyes and their hearts were in exile, were in servitude. What was in servitude there? Their bodies. This is the beginning of the spiritual servitude. What's there? There is the beginning of what? The physical servitude. So now we're learning from Rashi that Yaakov Avinu died, began the spiritual servitude. They were free. They were living in Eretz Goshen. Yosef was still Mishneh Lemelech. Kimadi was Melech. He was king. Right? Yosef was king. The Jewish people were having a good time there in Mitzrayim. Good time, in inverted commas. Right? second in charge, you know, Obama, who's second in charge there in Obama, some from Jew, so to call. So, I don't know how from, somewhat from, I think he keeps Shabbos. Everything's fine. You can buy your Froyos. You can get your OU Hershey bars, right? Everything's great. What's wrong? Says Chazal, the Shibud started. In Mitzrayim, they were fine. They lived in the best part of Mitzrayim. Lawrence. They had Upper West Side. Sorry, they didn't mean to be... you know, be pogging anyone in, like, I don't know, America. Lawrence, I saw up West Side, maybe I didn't see so well. But I'm sure, you know, the other places which are good. Long Island, probably you guys know better than me, right? I don't know the places. But they had good places. Yiddish people had good places, you know. And they weren't lacking anything. They sent their kids to college. They had enough money to help them out, you know, start off a business. Or get into dad's office, whatever it is, they're managing, they're doing good. If the economy wasn't doing good, the Yidden were doing good. And even when the economy's down, you can make money, right? That's what they say in Manhattan.
Yep.
So what's the problem? Everything's great. Enehem v'libam, their eyes and their hearts. So in order to understand this, you understand what, have to understand what eyes mean and what hearts mean. The Shibud started, the spiritual Shibud started. What does an eye represent? An eye represents our outlook. You see with your eye. Your outlook in life. No. Your outlook in life. Okay? What's your outlook in life? So the Chazal say, Einei ha'eda, the eyes of the people, that's the Chachamim, that's the wise people. The eyes represent the seeing of the wise, the seeing of the rabbis, their outlook. When you're going, the eyes of the flock, the people, that's the wise men. When your eyes are nistam, that means your outlook in life is nistam. There's a closing on your sight. You're not seeing properly. You're seeing. When you don't see properly, when you don't see things which are ruhani, then you're right. That's what you want to say. Your eyes see other things. I see what's called lotaturu acharei levavchem. Don't go after your heart. Acharei einechem, and your eyes. That's when your eyes are to see physical things. Asher atem zonim acharehem. Then you go astray with your eyes. Your eyes, the desires of your heart, make your eyes go astray. A Jewish outlook is when the eyes lead the heart. When we don't have eyes, when we don't have eyes that see a proper outlook to life, that it's not our eyes that lead our house. We're not our chokhmah, eyes are in your head, the highest part of your head. Not our chokhmah, our wisdom that leads our heart. We're no longer chokham lev. Rather, what are we? Lev, not chacham. Lev, it's lo taturu, acharei levavchem. Don't go after where your heart, the desires of your heart, and acharei einechem. That's how you say physicality. Egypt was the sea of physicality. Everything you wanted in the physical world, you could get in Egypt. Right? Sounds like Manhattan, right? Froyos, what else do they have there? Yeah, everything. Okay. And nowadays you don't have to go anywhere. You can order it on your iPhone, right?
You have to move, right?
You know, there was this... I've forgotten this film... There's called it about this these robots which show American society, like these fat people, and they're like, you know, they're...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
What's it called? Anyway, there's
Wally.
Oh, right. Yeah. That was talking about American society. The downfall of American society. It's basically the downfall of every society throughout the world has been that. Society gets to its prime, then becomes physical, and then there's a downfall of that society.
I think the creator of that is Jewish, by the way.
Huh? So it says, the Einayim represents the Chochmah, the wisdom of a person. The Lev is the seat of a person's emotions, his feelings, his La'avut HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his connection with his HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avodah Shebe Lev Zu Tefillah. So Chochmah is associated with Chachamim Torah. Lev is associated with Tefillah. and emotions and desires. That means with nistam, our hearts and our eyes, means ma'enot ha'chokhma, the connection to Torah is removed, and the connection to avodah, to tefillah, shehu avodah shebalev, is removed. What do we left have? We only have one thing, chesed. Olam chesed yibaneh, says the Gemara, says the Chazal, that chesed, the world can be built on chesed. So galus, right? We can still be in galus, so, and we can still be building, our world can still be built if there's chesed in the world, if there's kirva, if there's ava between one yid and another, we made it to the whole world. But when there's pirud, when there's machlokas, then even the midah of chesed we don't have. That's why the third Beis HaMikdash, which is Sinat Chinam, right? Which is the pirud, the Jewish people, that's the longest galus, because we don't even have chesed. Torah we lost, tefillah we lost. Torah and tefillah come from Beis HaMikdash. When we lose Beis HaMikdash, we lose Torah, because the awe, the light that was in the Beis HaMikdash, says the Ramban, was the same light that was on Har Sinai. That's the light of Torah. That's the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, which represents Torah. Obviously, Torah and tefillah go together, right? So Beis HaMikdash is also Makom Avoda. That's Makom HaTefillah. All that's left is chesed. But if we don't lose, we lose the chesed, we lose the kirva, achad l'sheni, then we don't have any amud. That's the worst exile. We're in the worst exile. We lost Torah, we lost tefillah, and we have machlokas, we have sinas chinam. We lost chesed. So, when we don't have all three amudim, we're in a bad state. You with me? Make sense to you? Pasuk says, Ki mitzion teitzei Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Baruch Hashem, we have Torah, we have Tefillah, we have Beis HaKnesset, we have Beis HaMedrash. A Beit HaKnesset is a mini Mishkan. A Beis HaMedrash is me'ein, the Torah. But it's not the same. It's not the same depth, it's the same level. Sanhedrin, we don't have Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin, Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, we don't understand what Sanhedrin is. Sanhedrin were Shivim Skenim, Gdolei Yisrael, sitting together and passing halachas. When they went to war, when they didn't go to war, anything, any shaila used to go through them. It was Nifsak Api Sanhedrin. There wasn't machlokas in Klal Yisrael, everything was clear. We have Torah, we have Me'ein Torah today, but it's not the same as we had when there was Beis HaMikdash. It's very, very, it's chitzonius comparison to the primius of the Torah that was in Beis HaMikdash. There was Nisim. When he's walking back in English. We're missing all of that. So that's why all our taniot are surrounded around the Beis HaMikdash and around Yerushalayim. Because Yerushalayim are Sara Kedushas, the 10 Kedushas. The taniot we're coming up to, which I was going to speak about, is Asara Batavis. Asara Batavis, when they started the siege in Yerushalayim, that means Yerushalayim was in Sakana. And then 3.5 years later, then they were entered in Yudayim B'Tamuz, and then they entered the city, and then on Tisha B'Av was the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So this is the beginning, Yud B'Tavis is the beginning of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's the beginning. It took 3.5 years, but it's the beginning. The beginning. Melech Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, came outside, and he put a siege on Yerushalayim. So when we understand that, we understand that the physical destruction, right, can only occur if there's a spiritual destruction first. If Yerushalayim is sieged, if Yerushalayim is destroyed, that means the life in Yerushalayim is destroyed. The living in Yerushalayim is destroyed. Yerushalayim doesn't represent, the Gemara says, Asara Kavim of Yosfi, 10 measures of beauty were given to the world. 9 of them took Yerushalayim. And one took the rest of the world. What does that mean? The Grand Canyon is not beautiful. What's it called? This Empire State Building, where they have the buildings. They're not beautiful. You go on the top, you can see, right? There's no like high place here. Yerushalayim is beautiful. It's physically beautiful, you know. There's all these Yerushalayim stones and stuff like that. What's the beauty of Yerushalayim? You know, people, when they see big rabbis, there's a certain warmth they come away from, there's a certain beauty they come away from. You with me? What is beauty? Beauty is when you have, like you see a beautiful sunset or sunrise, right? Beauty, the concept of beauty, Tiferet, the concept of beauty is when you have two opposites that synthesize. Two opposites that synthesize. Right? So, that's why sunrise and sunset is night coming into day. It's two opposites but synthesize. Why is Yerushalayim beautiful? Because Yerushalayim is the Yerushalayim we're living in is the physical world. But there's a Beis HaMikdash. The connection of the physical to the spiritual, that's two opposites. When two opposites connect and synthesize, which happens in the Beis HaMikdash, then you have the beauty. That's the ultimate beauty. Because there's two opposites synthesizing. That's what it means. Yerushalayim is the most beautiful. Nine measures of beauty. The rest of the world has ruchnius. You can go to the Grand Canyon and say, wow, the world's so amazing, and you recognize your Creator. Because when you see something which is beyond you, you realize that there must be something beyond you. And that gives you achna'a, that gives you a, how do you say achna'a, like a humility. And that humility brings you to recognition of your Creator. When you come to the Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, you see the Asara Nisim, the Ten Nisim that were in Yerushalayim. That hachna to something higher than you makes you realize, gives you a realization. You know, there's a story in the Gemara that it was a time of the Romans, and they came, and they were, you know, coming to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And I forgot the name of the person. They asked someone to go in and bring out the menorah, bring out the kelim, because they were frightened. They knew what Beis HaMikdash was. Someone else to go in, one yid. They know a yid can have a koach to do this. Go in and pick out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. So there's one Russia who went in. He went in, he brought it out. And then they told him, go in and pick up something else. So he's not going in. He said, we'll kill you. Not going in. They tortured him. What happened? And then he was zocher to Olam Haba. What happened? What happened? What happened to this guy? He was a Rosha.
He woke up.
Going into the Beis HaMikdash and seeing Hashrat Shechina. Even Begolus woke him up. Can you imagine? I'd lose a job. One trip, step in to the Beis HaMikdash. Everyone's putting tzitzis and kippahs. Everyone's from. Everyone's signed up to yeshiva. You have all the yeshivas outside, you know, with their leaflets, right? As people walk in. Please come to my yeshiva. Please come to yeshiva. You have 1,000 yeshivas, right? And they're full, right? And then there's going to be the goyim coming in. And they're going to be more, like, the leaflets of yeshivas of Noahite laws, right? The whole world. Can you imagine the whole world coming in, yeah? Everyone wants to see these Asara Nisim. Everyone wants to bring korbanos. Judaism's not only for Jews. Judaism's also non-Jews. Chazal tell us that if the non-Jews understood what shefa, what influence the Beis HaMikdash brings to the world, they would come and build it. Or they would make us build it. They can't build everything. They would make us build it. It wouldn't be Arab workers. They'd make us build it. We don't know what the galus is. What's galus? What's exile? Stima. We're closed from the reality of what the real world is. Where eyes are closed from seeing, our hearts are closed from feeling. When you went to a place where there's no stimot, where there's no closing, where there's a clarity, Yerushalayim, what does Yerushalayim mean, the word? Yiru Shalem. There's a Ria of Shlemus. There's a Ria of completion. When the physical and the spiritual world connects, that's Shlemus, that's completion, that's beauty. Shlemus and beauty are the same thing. Something which is a complete thing is a beautiful thing. That's what Yerushalayim represents. You wouldn't need these Kiruv programs and Tiulim and stuff like that. Just walk them in, right? I lose my job. Okay, might be learning. It's okay. I would be mavato if I could sit and learn. Could sit in the Sanhedrin. Could ask all your shilas. You have answers. Not like me. You ask me a question, maybe an answer, maybe not an answer. There's a clarity. There's a clarity in life. You want to know, should you go back to work? Should you marry this girl? Should you wait? Should you think? You go to Sanhedrin. You go thing. You ask, you get a clear question. You have Urim V'Tumim. Right? Everything's clear. There's Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim, what does it mean? Yirat comes from also Lashon of Riyah. There's a clarity that you're living for Shamayim. You're living with Shamayim. It's a different world. That's where we're in. We're in exile. Where? We don't know what we should be doing with our lives. How we should be living. What should we be living for? Should we stay in yeshiva? Should we not stay in yeshiva? Do I need to make a parnasa? Do I need to do this? Do I need to do that? And no one has the answers for you. And even if they do, you're not listening because you're closed. Our eyes are closed. Our hearts are closed. That's the goddess we're in. And because our eyes and our hearts are closed, our goof, our body, is meshubad. You know, when I was a young man, my father said, you know, the modern world, we live in a modern world. We don't have any poor people. Like in England you call it the plebs, or you call it the poor people and the governors, how you call it? The people in charge, you know, like in ancient medieval England, what do you have? You have the people in the castles and all the people around them, you know, the warriors, right? Arthur the Great, God knows what they call them. It doesn't matter. Nobles, and you have the peasants, right? Similar things in Arab countries, the kings, you know, and all the peasants. It hasn't changed much, right? It's like Russia's not so different either, right? And America's getting that way. When you lose the middle class, you lose democracy. It doesn't matter. So you have these nobles. And the nobles, you don't own land. Only the nobles own land. So how are you going to make a living? So the nobles give you their land, right? And you work their land. And you give them a percentage of the crops. And a percentage of the crops you keep for yourself. Now, well, you have food to eat. Maybe you give it, you sell some crops, you get an animal, whatever, and you make your little business. But that's how the world... Now we live in the modern world. There's no nobles. Equal opportunities. Everything's great. Only one problem. You want to buy a house? How much house costs? A few hundred thousand dollars. You have a few hundred thousand dollars change in your pocket? Half a million? Okay, you have a few. So you know what? You go to the bank, which has money from people who have money. You guys have money? No. And you spend 20 or 30 or 40 years of your life paying that mortgage. Right? You're giving the percentage, obviously, that mortgage is the percentage of what you're working for. But you're a free man, you can work whatever job you want, but you have to work, right? And generally speaking, the people you're working for are the nobles or their investments, right? So things have changed, haven't they? That's called Shibud Malchios. I then saw in the Ramchal. That's the Russian of Shibud. Shibud means in slavery. When you owe a person money, you enslave to them. That's why Eved Lover Leish Malva. The person's enslaved to the person he owes him money. Life hasn't changed that much. Maybe, you know, you have an iPhone now, they give you have more, you know, you can do a little bit more with your, get more luxuries, yeah? Like, you know, the food industry manages to sell you air and water and plastic, margarine, right? It's only one different molecule, one different chain between that and plastic. That's why your body doesn't absorb it. It's terrible for you. But everything we have has that. But it's great. It tastes good. The main thing is you enjoy life and we make money and everything's good. That's called goddess. That's called not understanding what we're living for. That's what's called we're throwing our lives away. For what? For a piece of house, piece of car. When you're 120, anyone writes, you know, who's successful people? Microsoft, I don't even know, what's Apple. It? Apple, all these, right? I want to ask you something. when they get 120, forget they believe in God, don't believe in God, when they get 120, you saw anyone's grave that he wrote, I went to 2 million parties, I met 300 million friends on Facebook. I don't know if they're friends, but okay, we'll give it to him. Right? Anyone write that sort of thing? Even the top people at Apple's not going to say, the guy who died, who invented the iPhone, I invented the iPhone, he put on his tombstone. What do people put? They spend most of their days working hard, eating, sleeping, inverted commas, enjoying life. And what, at the end of the days, is important, they put on their tombstone, which is what?
Husband,
father, brothers, friend, good person, help people out. Hello, guys. What happened? You spend your whole life, most of your time, in other things, and the things that are important, you didn't spend so much time? That's called galus. That's called your eyes and your heart are closed because you're not seeing properly. You're not thinking properly. Your heart's taking you to your froyos or to the new 707, maybe getting I series. Such a thing it is? Maybe 747, I got those. It must be I. Today, if you have an I in something, it means it's good, right? Right? The I something, right? Right? That's technology for you, right?
The brand.
And if it has to be thin, it's not thin, it's no good. Because just chas v'sholom, it should occupy too much of your pocket, right? But it's okay, what always makes this fun to me. Everyone has one of these things, puts on some big, massive plastic cover. So who cares if it's thin? The plastic cover's pretty thick, otherwise it's going to smash, right?
If you have a thick phone and then you put it in the cover, it's just
going to
be too big.
Why does someone develop a thin covering? You make a thick phone with a thin covering, it's cheaper. But okay, forget it. That's just... It's mishugas. It's poshim mishugas. That's called goddess. But I want to tell you something very secret now. Because I'm going to finish here. I didn't finish what I was saying. So, Asaras Batavis represents the losing of that Riyah, the losing of Yerushalayim, the living Yerushalayim, the losing of that Riyah of Shlemus, of beauty. We're beginning to lose that. Only when Klal Yisrael lose something can it be taken away from us. Only when we lose the Pnim, we lose the inner part of self, can the outer part of self be destroyed. So if Yerushalayim is being sieged, that means Asara Batavis represents the losing of our Riyah of Shlemus. We don't know what we're living for. We lost our eyes. We lost our eyes, and we lost our beauty. The Lev is a place of beauty. Why is the Lev a place of beauty? Tiferes is the goof, right? This, our head, represents a chokhma and a bina. A goof represents tiferes. The chazal, we see that last week's parasha, we saw that Yosef cried on Binyamin's neck, and Binyamin and Yosef's neck. What does Rashi say? It was a remez to the Batei Mikdashim, or the tabernacles, right? It's a remez that they were going to be destroyed. Why the neck? What the neck represents? The neck is the place where our body, our lev, connects to our head. The neck represents Mokom HaMikdash, because that's the place, kivyochol, that the higher world, the head of the world, i.e. the spiritual world, connects to the lev, the physical world. The Beis HaMikdash is the lev. The beauty, that's the connection of the neck to the head, to the physical world. That's represented in the neck. That's the Beis HaMikdash. To connect the spiritual to the physical. Understand? That's why that remez in Rashi about crying on the neck represents the Batei Mikdashim. That represents the place of Chibur. And that's why the neck in Chazal is considered, it's brought down. I think maybe it's the Zohar, not sure. The neck is a beautiful place of a person. That's why women, they wear necklaces on their neck. Right? It's not just thumb they wear. That represents beauty. Because the neck is the connection of the physical to the spiritual. That's the place where it connects. You with me? Understand what I'm saying? So, now that we've said this, what's the purpose of goddess? So we now know what's bad about goddess. It's very interesting that the word goddess comes from the world of galui, to reveal. The purpose of goddess, funny enough, is to reveal that which is nistam, to reveal that which is hidden, i.e. to remove those blockages. The reason we go into goddess, it's not a punishment. The pains and the traumas and the tribulations of life is not a punishment. Our internal goddess is what is it there for? Says Chazal, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, where does the Divine Presence come into the Beis HaMikdash? It comes in on the Mokom the Aaron, the place of the two Kruvim, the place of the two Cherubim. You with me? Mm-hmm. When the two Cherubim, what do they represent? A male and a female. When they're connected, the Jewish people are connected to its Creator. Before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, how did the Kruvim look? We're back to back. When I put my back to you, what does that show? I'm distant from you. I'm not connecting to you. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, what happened to Kruvim? They connected. Huh?
Weren't they hugging?
Yeah, connecting. They were connecting. They were hugging. Yeah, they were connecting. How come? Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Terrible. No. Says Chazal, the Loshon Mishkan. Mishkan is Loshon Mashkon. You know what Mashkon is? It's in trust here. I owe you money, right? You're going to lend me money, but you want a Mashkon, a collateral. Loshon Mishkan is Mashkon, it's collateral. The Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put his wrath, his cast on Eitzim and Anvanim and not on us. It's a Mashkon. He took his Mashkon. He didn't pick the law. He didn't touch his people. So now that payment was taken, and to understand more deeply, the goddess is not there to punish us. The pains and traumas and tribulations of life, right, is not there to punish you. It's there to awaken you and to open, to be megale, to reveal. That's what goddess is, to reveal that which you covered. So when we go through life and things happen to us, things which we don't like, what's our outlook to life? That's our goddess. That's our tsar. That's the tsar of a goddess. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in goddess. Shechina imo. Shechina goes down as in tsar in our goddess. For every yid that's in tsar and is in pain, for any person is in tsar and in pain, the Shechina's imo. Shechina's with him in goddess. Because goddess is there, those pains are there to reveal what you hid, to reveal those stimas. That's the purpose of goddess. That's the purpose of goddess Mitzrayim. What happened after goddess Mitzrayim? We went so down, we were so nistam, 49th level of impurity. That's why we had to be taken out. And we needed Esa Makas for us to be removed from being so low down. We need to be reawakened. But what did that goddess reveal? What was the revelation of that goddess? What was the tachlis of Mitzrayim? Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to understand why, what's the tachlis? What's the purpose of this goddess? What's the purpose of this goddess? The purpose of this goddess, Hahar Hazeh, is Matan Torah. That's the purpose. The revelation of Torah is the purpose of goddess.